This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I'm here this week with Waj.
How's it going? I feel that we're talking right now on Wednesday. This podcast will probably drop Thursday.
Tonight, hopefully.
And tonight. And let's see how many more people will be arrested. Right now, we got like four associates of Giuliani. What do you think?
Two of the four are Giuliani's associates, but I think we'll probably stay at four for a bit, if I had to guess.
Well, yeah, maybe, because I think I'm just really, like, we were just talking right before you started pressing record, who's going to throw who under the bus? Like, that's like, I think we're in that scene in Goodfellas where Ray Liotta's in already, you know, like, looking up and looking at the helicopter. And, you know, his brother is like stirring the sauce and he's got cocaine all over his nose. But I think we're at that scene where Robert De Niro's character like orders the hits to like clear all traces of like the wrongdoing. And I'm just really curious who's going to stab who in the back, because, you know, they're all weak criminals. They got weak chins. You know, none of these people are going to go to jail. Right? Like, I don't think they're going to go down for Trump. That's my take.
I don't see them going down for Trump, but I also don't see it so much as going to be like bus throwing as more like bus dragging.
Oh, nice. What's the difference between a bus drag and a bus throw?
Bus throwing implies that you are affirmatively taking steps to grab someone and hoist them in the way of that coming freight train so you don't have to take the hit. Bus dragging is where you're already under the wheel, so you drag them down with you.
Ah, okay. All right. So it's like, yeah, it's like the crab mentality. Like, if I'm going down, you're going down. Okay, I see that. You might have convinced me. Because we already saw the mustachioed villain, John Bolton, who might actually emerge the hero of this narrative. I just want to like just
false.
But just the fact that I even said that. This is John Bolton.
I'm not even going to allow this kind of talk, because there's a huge difference between like not being evil and being the hero. Not being like
being
the
less evil.
Not being the actual villain of the story doesn't make you the hero of the story. It just makes you not the villain of this particular narrative.
But what happens in this universe? Everyone's a villain, and you measure patriotism and heroism by who's the least evil. You see what I'm saying? Because Bolton was the one who allegedly...
Bolton's just being Bolton. Bolton's being consistent. We'll get more into him in a bit. But I would say, to me, Bolton is... he's not going to let his purity and focus on the simple need for regime change and war to be interrupted by the petty grifters all around him in the Trump administration.
And also profit, because we already know that he signed a book deal. And before he became national security advisor, he was making a high six-figure salary as a commentator on Fox News. So,
yeah,
in addition
but
to that,
he wasn't in the White House for the profit. I believe that he was in the White House for war and regime change. Now he's out, he'll make some money. Anyway, this week I was going to start off by talking about some of the recent Trump rallies that he's been doing on the campaign trail, and then I changed my mind because it's too depressing. If you want to get like an overview and not have to endure it yourself, I had some tweet threads where I put myself through that for y'all. I suffer for my art indeed. But I'd like to point out, because I still like just keep thinking about this every once in a while since it happened, and I'm like, wow, that's the thing that happened in real life, and nope, we're just going on like nothing really matters. Like, okay, anyway, the point being,
the orgasm?
Yes, yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. The part where our president, the president of the United States, stood on stage and pantomimed, I guess reenacted an orgasm.
Was gasping, and he was very, very impressive. I mean, I always forget that he's actually a good actor when he wants to be.
I can't even think about it anymore. It was too horrifying. As it was happening, I'm like, part of me like knew what was happening. Another part of me was like detached. Like, no, that surely cannot be what's going on right now. And like, yes, of course that's what's going on, because he was, yeah. Basically, he was like trying to do his usual attacks on the FBI agent and lawyer, Strzok and Page. And he just took it further and further and further.
And he climaxed on stage. I actually saw it three times. The first time I saw it, I'm like, is this actually happening?
Wow, no, I watched it once, never again. Well, that was more than enough for a lifetime.
Because the second time, I'm like, that didn't just happen. And the third time, I was like, wow, that happened. Okay.
And we're just going along, like, whatever. Like, people aren't really talking about it. Like, I have not heard it mentioned in the media since that night. Because, you know, of course that's what he could do, and not that big a deal. Which, to be fair, compared to the other living hells going on right now, I guess it's not that big a deal. But for me, that's the thing I'm still fixating on.
No, but I mean, that's where we're at right now. We're like, okay, let the president have his fake orgasm at a rally. Let him feel good. At least he isn't betraying the Kurds. Oh, never mind. Betrayed the Kurds. And at least he isn't parroting Russia talking points. Oh, nope.
Well,
nope,
he's always
never
been
mind.
Doing that, but...
You know, but like, oh, the Ukraine scandal, it can't get any more complicated, messy, dirty, filthy, hypocritical. And yes, it can. Yes, it can, ladies and gentlemen, because we are dealing with the Trump administration. And
yeah,
Rudy Giuliani.
And it's definitely back at that stage where it was like in 2017 when the Russia stuff was coming out, where I can no longer keep it straight. What's happened, which week, or where we're at, or what we did last week, or what updates we haven't discussed in the show. So let's try and go back to last Tuesday. As I say that, I'm like trying to chronologically put in my head all the things that have happened. I'm like, I don't even know. It's just blurring so much. But last Tuesday, what I do know that happened was a letter released from Pat Cipollone, the White House lawyer, that low-key kicked off a constitutional crisis, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair. Yeah, basically obstruction. Full tilt obstructionism.
See, obstructionism is too kind a word for it, because that implies that he is, you know, within the rules of the constitutional game, but he is declining. He's trying to weasel his way out of it. This is just a rejection of the constitutional premise that this country operates on, because his letter, which Trump clearly helped dictate, as was later reported, he basically just declares that he will not recognize the House's impeachment inquiry and that he will not cooperate with it and that to him it doesn't exist, basically.
Yeah, basically he lives in his own reality where he's a dictator and the Constitution doesn't matter and he's above the law. And, you know, he can't do it. I know we keep mentioning this, but he can't do it by himself. And that's what people need to always remember, that after this is all said and done and somehow one day it will finish, there were many people who enabled it, allowed it, were complicit in it. Who were participants, willing participants, right? That's like we forget that we actually used to live or still kind of live in a democracy with checks and balances. And it, like, just because the president says something, like, he needs people to actually enforce it. And that's what's really troubling, is he has people like Barr and Mulvaney and Sondland and Cipollini and everyone else actually literally within like our own faces, our own lifetimes, saying, here are two middle fingers to the law, to due process, to the Constitution, and what you going to do about it? What you going to do about it? F you.
And man, it reminded me that's not even on the list for this week for our topics to discuss, but worth noting that like little episode of like Christo-fascism going on with Pompeo and Barr both giving like really dark, I don't even want to call them Christian speeches, like just really dark Christian propaganda, I guess. Some seriously like creepy stuff about how they're Christian leaders on a crusade basically against the forces of secularism that are trying to destroy our society.
No, but that's actually, you know, you actually paraphrase exactly what William Barr, the Attorney General, said at the University of Notre Dame. He used the catchphrase of secularists and essentially created a conspiracy theory where secularists are using mass communication, the media, the news, to have a full-scale attack on, you know, traditions and religious values. And I think it's really important that you brought that up, because that gives you the window into the mindset and the ideology of some of these individuals, people like Pompeo, Pence, Barr. So they rationalize everything that they're doing because they think that literally like religion, religious traditions, their values are under extinction by this multicultural threat of like, you know, secularists. We're like Thanos coming for them, which explains why they're willing to scorch the earth. And the fact that a sitting attorney general would give this speech as he's attorney general and Pompeo is like willing to say all this stuff as secretary of state. Remember that? Remember, like, people forget that Secretary of State Pompeo a couple months ago openly talked about the rapture at a public speech. The rapture. So I'm glad you brought that up, because that's what we're dealing with as well.
Yep. Peachy keen week this week in the United States. We all want to do the right thing to keep our bodies healthy in the long run. But even if we're trying really hard to eat kale salads and drink green smoothies, or even if we're not trying that hard, we're still most likely not getting all of the essential nutrients that we need on a daily basis. And that's where Ritual comes in. Ritual is the obsessively researched vitamin for women. Ritual's essentials have the nutrients that most of us don't get enough of from food, all in a clean, absorbable form, with no shady additives and no ingredients that can do more harm to your body than good. It's just 2 easy-to-take capsules a day that provide 9 nutrients that you need to support a strong foundation for your health. From D3 to omega-3, Ritual's Essential for Women helps fill in gaps in a woman's diet. And for obsessive label readers, all of Ritual's vegan-friendly, sugar-free, non-GMO, gluten-free, and allergen-free ingredients and their sources are out there for the whole world to see. And I love it because, being honest, it's extremely convenient. It ships right to your door, you can snooze on your subscription anytime you want, and it's the way to make sure you know you're getting the vitamins you need without really having to worry about it. Better health doesn't happen overnight, and right now, Ritual's offering our listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/45th to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/45th. Anyway, as for the impeachment inquiry, we had the letter from Pat Cipollone. Again, just the rejection of the Constitution and the sole power of impeachment will lie with the House and all that. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't, like, come up with an argument that, like, you know, what is it, Clause 4 of Article 2 about the president's powers talks about how the president can be removed by impeachment. Therefore, impeachment powers really lying in Article 2. But that may be too technical for even these legal jokers.
Too much.
So after that, we had, and against this backdrop of stonewalling by the White House, we actually had an extremely active week of interviews before the House, depositions behind closed doors. Now, so the White House has, like, done everything it can to stonewall and to stop everyone from participating. However, a lot of the people who are appearing for these depositions are now out. I think all, I don't want to say all of them, almost all of them are out now of the White House or whatever executive agency they were at before. So the government can't actually stop them. Now it tries. It ordered basically all of them, I think actually literally all of them, not to cooperate. So the House was forced to subpoena them, like, the morning of when they show up to give them legal cover. For why they have to testify, even though they want to, but for their own sake, subpoenas provide protection. So, yeah, the White House's obstruction can only go so far. Which is interesting, though, that as part of the Republican strategy for opposing all this is to take this process argument on literally everything. And they're even complaining about the subpoenas. They're like, oh, look at the Democrats in the House issuing subpoenas to the witnesses. As if that's somehow an objection to this whole proceeding or somehow a negative for the Democrats. I mean, anything that's like process that happens, they're like, look at that, regardless of what it is, as a reason for why this is all unconstitutional. And
but the hypocrisy, you know, the hypocrisy is so stunning because we're old enough to remember that Republicans dragged like the highest officials to come and testify for hours. I remember Hillary Clinton was called in for the email gate. And I remember for Benghazi, I remember Eric Holder was brought in and they voluntarily showed up. They actually.
Well, Eric Holder is probably not your best example there.
but let's say Clinton, right? Clinton showed up, Secretary of State. And then we also know now because they admitted it that Kevin McCarthy, House Minority Leader, openly said that the Benghazi hearings were just a political hit job on Clinton. That being said, they at least, if you will, responded to the request and showed up and actually gave deference to the rule of law and the House and their authority and accountability and oversight. And like you mentioned, this White House is just like, nope, this is wrong, even though when we do it, it's perfectly fine, which also gives you a window into the fact that they're all bad faith actors. They just use and abuse power to get ahead. But the fact that you had Volker and Yovanovitch and a few others who actually went ahead and gave pretty damning testimony.
Some of them were more self-serving than others.
But still, who cares? Who cares? They said what they had to say. And I think I'm convinced with your whole bus dragging analogy. There was a lot of bus dragging today.
Yeah. So we had interestingly for Volker, who testified, I guess, last week or 2 weeks ago or a month ago. I can't even tell. He was back on the Hill today to review a transcript of his deposition. I'm not sure why, but that's kind of interesting. Was he needing to check up on something he said or to clarify any statements he may have made? Who knows? But yeah, we also this week had Fiona Hill testify. She was the deep state mole, as I'm sure the right alt-right media is calling her, who worked in the Trump administration for, I think, over 2 years. And I think she managed to survive primarily because Trump thought she was a secretary. For real. He legit thought she was a secretary. But she was a senior person on the whole Russia strategy for the U.S. Yeah, so she finally left, I guess a couple months ago now, this over the summer. And she testified that this whole Ukraine thing was a mess that a lot of people are aware of. And in fact, it was Bolton who sounded the alarm over many parts of it. And his quote that she said, what he Bolton told her, is that, "I am not a part of whatever drug deal Mulvaney and Sondland are cooking up."
It's like if Breaking Bad was, starring morons. That's like Breaking Bad, the Idiocracy version, starring Mulvaney and Sondland. It's stunning. It's stunning.
Yeah,
that
only instead of meth, it's corruption.
Yeah, but look, Bolton is, I mean, who would have thought that we're living in interesting times in the upside down where Bolton is the least villainous villain. So you got to give
him some... Okay, here's where I'm objecting to what you're saying about this, because his motives are not financially corrupt here, but like, dude still wants war and regime change just for the sake of it. So, I mean, that's still, you know, if this was like The Good Place, he's still pretty damn negative. Just a different type of negative than the rest of them.
Why are you denying me my spectrum of villainy, Susan? He will always be a villain, but at the
very... Because the dude's probably mad we didn't go ahead and nuke North Korea. So...
But at least, you know what? He made Fiona, or actually asked her to go talk to the White House counsel, create a record. He threw, it seems, Giuliani, Mulvaney, Sondland under the bus. And that other quote, he described Giuliani as a live hand grenade that's about to go off at any moment.
Yeah, I had a tweet thread a couple weeks ago about Bolton's role in all this and Rick Perry's role in this, and how Giuliani was the monkey wrench in their whole Ukraine plan. And I feel like I definitely missed the mark with that analogy. Bolton was definitely better at the... describing the actual role being played by Giuliani here, which is like to fuck all this shit up, basically.
How about Perry? Because Perry's the same guy who, let's not forget, forgot the department that he wanted to scrap if he became president. And of course, he became the head of that energy department.
Yeah, but he still thinks it does energy. Like, he still has not learned 2.5 years on the job that actually your real job is nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I don't think he gets it. And you actually are bringing up something totally accurate, because 2 weeks before he was about to be appointed, he completely misunderstood the nature of his job. And then there's like, no, dude, it's actually nuclear weapons. He goes, oh, well, I'll learn. So I still don't think he gets it. But like, what do you think his role is? Because I don't see him as the brains of any operation.
He is heavily involved in the Ukraine push for LNG, primarily for the whole energy strategy the U.S. has over there, which... maybe I'll do an episode on later, because there's a whole lot going on. But I mean, from what I've seen so far, the stuff he's doing over there is like low level, regular, kind of, I won't even say gross. It's not that. It's not like corrupt. What he was doing was he was trying to change various boards and state owned companies in Ukraine with regards to mostly gas, LNG, basically trying to sell American LNG to them. And to create pipelines that would allow a Polish LNG deal that was previously signed to be more successful. This grand unified theory of foreign relations by LNG is what Perry's part of. And he was using his role in that to put like his friends from Texas and certain industry guys on these boards. But that's not, I'm not going to call that corrupt, because that's like fairly normal. He wasn't trying to get personally enriched by any of it. He's just trying to put people he knows and trust to carry out this LNG foreign diplomacy party line, and who may have financial benefits coming their way from it based on their energy connections. Who knows? So yeah, it's like gross but not corrupt.
Gross,
so
but
that's
not
his
corrupt.
Role. Yeah, yeah. I don't think he was involved in this drug deal either. Mulvaney is really flying under the radar because he clearly is deeply involved in all this shit. And so far, I think other than Fiona Hill's testimony about the drug deal thing, he's not really come up in it.
But no, today, the Washington Post had a huge article outlining Mulvaney's alleged role. They got people on the record anonymously saying that he was the guy who had kind of like Miles Davis created his own band, and they called it the Three Amigos. And the Three Amigos are Volker, Sondland, and Rick Perry. And he's the guy who's been running interference for Trump, being completely acquiescent to him, and engineering, if you will, this alleged extortion, you know, withholding the congressionally approved $400 million of aid to Ukraine to get Zelensky to attack Biden. So Mulvaney's role, if this Washington Post article is accurate, is going to come under a lot of scrutiny this week.
So we also had, I guess it was this week, we had Marie Yovanovitch, the former ambassador to Ukraine, who was at the center of a lot of this. She testified. And then we had George Kent. He was a queer official who was part of the, I guess, the phalanx that was trying to stop Yovanovitch's ouster. And today, like just now, just recently concluded, we had Michael McKinley testify. And he was a former state official, senior, who resigned in part because of his disgust over Pompeo's refusal to support Ambassador Yovanovitch. Now, I guess we'll just kind of breeze past that for now because there has not been a whole lot of interesting leaking yet. But at some point, it'll be worth going back to these all these people and what they testified about as they put together the case for impeachment on the Hill.
Yeah, but he was pretty pissed, though. I mean, he talks about the politicization of...
Oh, yeah. Dude's, he quit for, like, purely, like, couldn't handle any more of this shit. He's out.
It's, like, so egregious. He's like, all right, I gotta tap out. Just too naked.
And at first with Pompeo, he was like, yay, at least it's not the wretched piece of shit that Tillerson was. And then he quickly realized that, no, this was not, in fact, the improvement he was hoping for.
It was worse. It was a stinkier piece of poop.
So, we then have, coming up this week, we've got Bill Taylor, I think, possibly next week. But the one I am most eager to not watch or listen to, but hear the leaks about afterwards, is Gordon Sondland, the hotelier whose million-dollar donation got him a plum post as the ambassador to the EU, which does not include the Ukraine, but nevertheless, Sondland was leading the charge there. Sondland is right now leading my list of most person in the administration most likely to get indicted.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, from what we know so far. Because Sondland is deep in the shit. And also, he is like, he's definitely using the Cohen strategy of, before his testimony on the Hill, strategically leaking what he'll be testifying about to various media outlets, sort of previewing what he's saying, trying to set the agenda, set the narrative before he ever gets there. Unfortunately, I mean, one, it didn't work out for Cohen, so it's not like that's a great strategy necessarily anyway. But also, he keeps getting preempted by other witnesses. Because earlier this week, like a Monday or maybe it was Friday, it seemed like he was trying to... I mean, first there was a whole nuts article where he's like, yeah, I talked to Trump, and Trump said it was no quid pro quo, but I didn't have any basis to believe that other than what he told me, so I just assumed it was true. Yeah, and then he started to say... Yeah, that was weird. And then he said, he leaked. Someone close to him, familiar with his thinking, leaked to the media that his testimony would be that although he was involved in, not pressuring, I don't think this is words of that, involved in persuading the Ukrainian officials to make an announcement about Burisma, at no time was he aware that Biden was connected to Burisma or that this had anything to do with Biden and not just a regular corruption issue. Which, of course... Like, I think that day, in fact, Fiona Hill testified on the Hill about how all the stuff that Gordon Sondland knew, which precluded the possibility that when he was talking to Ukraine about Burisma, he didn't know exactly why Trump cared about it.
You ever see Shawshank Redemption?
I have.
Yeah, remember when Andy Dufresne, like all the new recruits come in and they play the game of who's going to squeal first and break? I feel like that's why Sondland's probably going to be the one indicted, because out of all the players, maybe Mulvaney. I see Mulvaney and Sondland as the ones who break. Like, this guy's a million. This guy's like a billionaire or multimillionaire?
But Sondland's also the worst of this because he has no idea what he's doing. And he's leaving a very, very robust paper trail, unlike some of the other players. I mean,
he's a rich boy. He's a super rich boy who literally bought his position.
Yeah, he's in over his head. I think Mulvaney has an advantage there by far. And he's just already. Been forced to contradict himself so many times, go back and forth. I don't know what he can say at this point to make himself look good. And I think his concern needs to be not being prosecuted as opposed to just not looking bad.
I mean, but he was smart enough to pause before responding to Taylor and go to Trump, allegedly, and then come back and say, maybe we shouldn't discuss this over text.
Yeah, let's have a conversation. That's a dumb criminal's idea of a smart criminal. Because that's not actually helping him that much, because there's still a record of him saying, call me, which then gets you dragged before a grand jury or before Congress to answer questions about it. So, yeah, Sondland should be exciting.
you got to give credit to Taylor though, because Taylor was creating a record.
Oh, Taylor! Taylor is new to this game, and he was not. He was also definitely not part of any drug deal that anyone in the administration was cooking up, and he was going to leave a detailed text record to prove it.
Good for him, man. Good for him.
I mean, so I do. My background's like in white collar defense, and like again and again, reading the messages between these guys, like I just like see all these old cases that have happened in the white collar world, in the farm bribery world, and they remind me so much of the interactions between executives at organizations that have gotten involved in this kind of shit, where you have like one executive stationed in a certain foreign country where they're trying to get a certain deal done, and he sees where this is going, and he's like, oh, nope, I am not doing that. I'm not getting in legal jeopardy just for this deal. And that executive will be sending texts to the others all the time, like basically laying the groundwork that will later get them in huge trouble if and when it comes out and the suitors find it. But at the time, they're just trying to cover their own asses to make it clear that they're not going to report on this. They're not going to turn in the guys doing this. But also, they're definitely not part of it. Notice that Taylor was not a whistleblower. He didn't do anything to say what was happening. He just made it clear that he was not going down for it, which is not a dig at him. Like, that's not to say that he somehow acted badly by doing that. But yeah, his goal there was, I would say, very much making sure he didn't accidentally get implicated in the drug deal.
I look forward to this Mexican standoff. It's going to be glorious. Susan, you've seen me dress, and I think you have described my sartorial style as Karachi Uncle, 1998.
I mean, yeah, that's not unfair.
Thankfully, for adults like me, there is a beautiful service to help us feel and look good, stylish, and fresh. Ladies and gentlemen, StitchFix.com.
I am a huge fan of Stitch Fix and rely on them kind of a lot. It's gotten to the point where like I'm out with friends or something and someone's like, oh, I love your outfit. I'm like, I want to claim credit for this, but also that'd be lying. So usually I admit that actually it's Stitch Fix because it's just so easy.
Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service. That's right. You go online, you give them your profile, and then they pick a beautiful expert outfit for you. They mail it to you. You got to wear it and then just flaunt and strut and get all the compliments.
Outfits plural, and they tell you how to change them up so you can use the same pieces over and over again. And everyone's like, wow, I love that new outfit you've got. And you're like, psych, bitch, I've worn it 5 times. You just didn't realize it.
And actually, Susan does say that.
Oh. I do. With Stitch Fix, everyone can look their best. They have solutions for women, men, and kids all over the U.S. and now in the U.K. So get started today at stitchfix.com/45th and get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. That's stitchfix.com/45th, stitchfix.com/45th.
You're right. Like this is like white collar criminal crime, but like done by idiots.
It usually is. No, I'm kidding. I shouldn't say
like,
that.
But even more stupid, like less, more self-destructive, like more blunt, less subtle, and the fact that it's being done in the White House. Like we joke about it, but it's just like, God dang, man, it's like so bad. It's so bad. Yeah. And the fact that like we forget that this all got kicked off, not just by the whistleblower complaint, but the transcript that Trump himself sent out thinking that it exonerated him when it actually did the exact opposite. And then he went out and admitted it on TV. Like that just, it's awesome. We like America might be saved by his self-destructive idiocy.
Or killed by it. Ironic. Or killed by it. You never know.
Thank you, Susan, for your
that can go two ways there.
I appreciate it.
I mean, Trump is still tweeting, like I think, daily about the whistleblower, who does not matter in the slightest anymore, because nothing the whistleblower had to say is now original or unique compared to what everyone else is confirming on the record on a daily basis. And yet they still attack the whistleblower. So the House interviews are going at a very furious clip, but their subpoenas for documents less so. In fact, we had, after the Cipollone letter that gave that 9 pages of anti-constitutional authoritarian, no, I'm not going to recognize your existence, we had several other White House agencies and personnel follow suit. In fact, we had OMB, Office of Budget. We had the DOD, Esper, and we had Pence himself all respond with a flat no, they're not going to participate. And Pence's letter definitely wins the award for most scare quotes so far. Now, I think they all got together and agreed that when they wrote these letters saying they're not going to participate in subpoenas, to call it a quote unquote impeachment inquiry in scare quotes, because they're all doing it.
Do you think they're on the same WhatsApp group? I think they are.
Yeah, the same WhatsApp group with text auto-deleted every like 20 minutes probably.
Yeah, I don't think they're smart enough to be on Signal. I just straight up think they're on either they're on WhatsApp or they're on like the
same. They're in each other's Twitter DMs, likely if I had to guess. But
yeah, like yo, bro, yo, this is what I'm gonna say. That's awesome. That's a great idea. I'm gonna put on scare quotes. Me too. Yeah, and like that, just you know, ad hoc, PR, emergency communications.
What their stated rationale is for refusing to cooperate is that they are they're not recognizing the Congress's impeachment inquiry because it's not one, and it's not constitutional, and it's, you know, all these bad things because the House did not hold a vote on whether to open an impeachment query before Nancy Pelosi announced that it was beginning. And therefore, it's not a real one, and therefore they don't have to comply with it. And this is a dumb argument. I'd like to stress that it's a very dumb argument with no basis whatsoever. However, it's a very effective argument to make because it's going to work on a large number of people. They're going to see this. They're going to see the reporting. They're going to see the poorly phrased or slightly misdirected headlines about it. And they're going to reasonably conclude, like, wait, why is Nancy Pelosi delaying such an important vote? Like, why isn't she launching an impeachment inquiry? Yeah, maybe she should. Like, what's the holdup here? And likewise, the White House's arguments about the whole, this is unconstitutional for like lack of due process and lack of fairness to the president and Republicans, that will also strike a chord with people who are like, well, yeah, it's in courts. We do let people have basic due process rights. Why isn't that happening here? So, yeah, it's effective for a media strategy, but it's wrong legally because, one, the...
You're wrong.
Yeah, it's just, there's no such thing as a vote for impeachment query. It has happened before in other presidential impeachment proceedings, but like impeachment ain't for presidents. I think there's been like, what, 60 impeachments in the course of our history? And what, four of them now have been for presidents, but most are for other other types of personnel. Usually judges is the big one. And yeah, like you don't, when you, what happens is the House votes on articles of impeachment, and if they pass, that person is impeached. The idea of having a vote to open an impeachment inquiry, like, sure, you can do that if you want to, but it has no legal significance and no force. It's more a PR showing. It's more a way of like signaling, yep, we're doing this, we're serious. But there's no constitutional reason that it could possibly be required. And some people are like, well, Nancy Pelosi should just go ahead and hold the vote anyway, because that would, you know, take away this argument from them, and that would make everything much more cleaner and nicer. And no, I'm fully on board with their refusal to play this Mother May I, Simon Says game that Republicans are trying to do. Because if the Republicans are successful in getting the House to comply with this stupid demand, they'll just have a new one. They'll have a new line in the sand, a new set of goalposts. It's not going to actually cause them to comply with anything.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's going to work in their base. They're going to basically gin up the same old witch hunt hoax. Trump's going to use it to go on his rallies. But I think this is now, they have him, right? They got him dead to rights. And you know more is going to come out. You know there's going to be more whistleblowers. There's going to be more people who are going to come and just rat out the Trump administration. There should be a death by a thousand cuts. I think they should just basically, as long as they're moving it forward and connecting the dots for the American public, and as long as it stays in the news that this is a corrupt administration, I think it's in Pelosi's interest to kind of drag this out, like kind of a Chinese
order.
Oh,
she's not doing that. She's trying to go fast as possible. She's going to try.
But I think water torture. Yeah, but like if you can just drag it out a little bit, right? Just drag it out a little bit. Just make sure.
Oh, no. They're trying to go fast as possible. That's their logic. They think it's better for them to go fast.
But do you think so?
Whether I think so or not, the question is it like feasible in reality? Like, even if it was better to do the quick roll, based on how Trump's responding to everything, it's unlikely that could even succeed.
Interesting. I still think, though, if they can take a couple of days to extend it, because people still have a fickle memory and the election is a year away. And I still have complete faith in Republicans finding some conspiracy theory to attack whoever is the Democratic candidate. and just strategically understanding how Trump operates. He's a creature of reality TV and cable news. The more he's on the back foot, the more he disintegrates. Case in point, the last 3 weeks. That's one reason I wouldn't mind her kind of extending it out a little bit, but still going through the motions. That's just my two cents.
Yeah, well, she's going to Pelosi like always, so...
She's going to Pelosi.
She's going to try and go... She's definitely going to try and go fast. The question for me is whether she's going to succeed in doing that. But yeah, like I think this argument's going to be more effective than just on his base, because it does sound superficially appealing to basic norms and beliefs when it means to be American that people expect. So it's a good headline winner. I think they've realized that. And part of why going slow would probably help is that they can see, well, I don't know if that would help with that. But the longer this takes, the more people have time to get educated on what impeachment is, which might counteract some of the propaganda. Because impeachment is basically the grand jury phase of the investigation. It's equivalent to the secrecy of a grand jury where the prosecutor brings in evidence, the grand jurors give a thumbs up or thumbs down, and if they say, yeah, indict them, then it moves on to the trial phase where a court presides with, you know, full rules of evidence, as would happen in the Senate if and when the House impeaches Trump. And they're absolutely going to impeach Trump. I feel very confident of that at this point.
Wait, no, you think the Senate will vote for it?
No. The House is going to impeach him.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Yeah, so when it comes to the exactly, because when it comes to the trial, you should not have any faith in Mitch McConnell doing the right thing. They're going to try to kill this as soon as possible. And so the House will definitely impeach. And now we have approval as of today in the morning of 52% of Americans want to impeach and remove Donald Trump from the presidency, which is stunning if you think about it, because at the start of the Watergate hearings, impeachment approval was at 19%, and it took about 13 to 14 months for that to rise up to 57%, and that was after the damning evidence came out against Nixon. So the fact that, I mean, legally, they haven't really even taken an actual vote on the impeachment process, and it's at 53%, I mean, milk it. Cut them.
I think Americans have been sick of the shit for a long while, and Democrats shouldn't have dragged their feet the past 9 months in doing it, but here we are finally.
You and me are in agreement on that, and we were right.
They're quite frankly, the voice of democracy is God, no more of this, please. Whether it can be ended is another question, but the public has already reached a position on it. Anyway, that is all what's going on with the impeachment stuff, which is based on Ukraine, and the House is trying very hard to keep it focused on Ukraine, but it's probably not going to succeed because there's so much other shit going on. This week also, we are going to have a guest on to talk about what's going on in Syria, which is, frankly, among the more depressing things that ever happened in the Trump administration, and that's a very high bar. Scheduling did not work out, so we'll probably hold off for a bit to discuss everything going on in Turkey and Syria, which unfortunately is not going away anytime soon.
But you know, for Syria, people forget that there's a civil war that's been going on for 8 years. Over 500,000 people have died. There's been over 11 million people displaced. And the fact that Donald Trump, right, even if you're against war, which I hope most of us are, and you want the troops to come home and you're against intervention, there has to be a strategy in place to actually exit. And what we're seeing is literally Donald Trump rolled over yet again to another authoritarian leader. This was allegedly, you know, at this whim of a decision to pull out of northeastern Syria was after a phone call with the president of Turkey, Erdogan. No consultations. He made the decision. And this decision helps, Susan, only four players. Syria, ISIS, which is now redoubling its efforts, Russia, and Iran. And Turkey, as of our podcast recording, has already invaded northeastern Syria, killed Kurds, allowed ISIS to escape, and now the Kurds, who are allies just to survive the onslaught from Turkey, are now aligning themselves with Syria and Russia. A complete and utter cluster F.
We'll get more into the details there, because it's a very complicated situation, but the TLDR is that this is a historic disaster in the making that will have consequences for Europe, America, Middle East, of course, for years to come. And there's no way to stop it. You're just watching it happen. And yeah,
Well, and just today, Trump said, "Well, the Kurds are no angels."
He said the Kurds were worse terrorists than ISIS. I can't even. We'll get back into that more next week, hopefully. But that is the backdrop for this whole intent of Congress to focus on Ukraine, when all of Trump's other incompetences and other corruption is interfering with their nice, clean, tidy Ukraine narrative. Even the Ukraine narrative, however, is no longer as tidy and clean-cut as it seemed at first, because this baby keeps sprawling out even further. And I feel like we're bearing the lead here, because I think we're, like, what, half an hour, 40 minutes into the show, and have yet to remark on the fact that we have more. Oh, we already talked about it, didn't we? More indictments, more arrests made of Trump world people.
More.
But, like, it is really a tremendous number of people. Actually, scratch that. A tremendous number of old white men and a couple young ones, hi Papadopoulos, who have been arrested for their connections and their involvement in the Trump administration. There's a pattern here. You think that his supporters would, like, kind of notice that he's surrounded with corrupt old white dudes, but I guess they're okay with that?
Yeah, they're okay. They don't care.
But yeah, we had Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, who were arrested as they were at Dulles trying to fly out on a one-way ticket to Austria. Now, I just saw before we started recording that I believe Igor Fruman has in fact made his $1 million bond and is now out of jail.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, Lev Parnas is still there, probably having a harder time to make bail than his partner was. And they also arrested the two others who were involved in this scheme. I think David Correa, who was also arrested in an airport. I don't know if he was taking a one-way ticket to Vienna as well. Anyway, this
number four now. There's number four.
Yeah. This indictment, though, was kind of surprising to me, because I've been following these guys, you know, out of interest in entertainment for a little while now. And what I did not see coming is that part of their corruption and their scheme wasn't just the whole LNG angle, but it was a recreational marijuana business that they were illegally lobbying for and using foreign money to help a Russian businessman who wanted more licenses in the recreational marijuana business. Yeah.
You can never say I don't help you, because I was going to bring that up 3 minutes ago and I just had a feeling. I'm like, Susan's really been waiting a week to bring this up. So I just wait. I just want to let you know that I sacrificed for your joy.
Well, this is... I mean, okay, one is predictable, because these guys were always going to be, it was always going to end this way for them, let's be real. But what it kind of reminded me of, too, is the whole Cohen situation, where the ultimate indictment does come down on some serious charges involving conspiracy and fraud and all that. But the focus of it is not on their Trump-related activities. It is all on their lobbying of various congressmen, particularly Pete Sessions. And there's only a couple quick references to what happened with the ambassador in Ukraine, Ambassador Yanukovych, who, for whatever reason, and it's a complicated story involving, Lutsenko, the former chief prosecutor in Ukraine, who had a big old giant spat with her and they didn't like one another and all their drama spilled out and yada, yada, yada. Anyway, Parnas and Fruman and all them wanted her out, so they started giving money to Republican congressmen to help them on their campaign to oust her. Now, that does pretty directly, actually, intersect with Trump. But it was really kind of a side note. It was like the taxi medallions for Michael Cohen and his indictments. The focus is the marijuana and the taxi medallions, not the Trump stuff.
I mean, it is just interesting. I mean, I was just thinking about this. And you've had a career in prosecuting white-collar crime. Take it back. You can edit that. You've had a career in defending white collar criminals or alleged criminals, but like, I'm just so like, I was just thinking about this because again, there was some breaking news today about more financial crimes that allegedly Donald Trump has committed. Like all this stuff, if you just like sniff at it, or if you just like take away one layer, it's all there. And so why is it not like uncovered sooner, Susan? You know what I'm saying? Like Trump's been doing this like nakedly. Do people just not care? Is this just how the rich work?
I think it's because of Mueller. I think it's two parts. I think one, I think Trump really did, for him, be on best behavior while Mueller was still operating. I think his craziness did get checked a bit by his fear of Mueller while that was ongoing. So I think once it was over, he just let loose again, and all this came flying out through all of 2019. And I also think that the way Mueller operated and the way that played out politically meant that everyone was free to not care about it. Everyone was free not to take action about it, because there's the possibility Mueller will happily resolve all this and tie up all the loose ends. So that's someone else's problem. I mean, yes, it's serious and we care about it, but it's not our place to take action.
Okay, fair enough. But I just feel like these people are like have been openly committing crimes, and no one has seemed to like care or notice. Like, he's been doing it for years. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just is like the corruption is so rank. Why did it take so long for the rest of it to catch up? That's basically what I'm asking.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Giuliani has been doing this foreign consultancy work and likely violation of FARA for a long time. Although part of it is worth noting that before Trump came into office and FARA became suddenly a much more bigger problem, FARA enforcement, that's the Foreign Agent Registration Act, I think they're, to call them few and far between implies there were some, and there weren't any. It was not something that was regularly enforced with any vigor. DOJ has now staffed up its FARA division quite a bit, and does plan to use it as part of our enforcement of campaign issues and lobbying issues. So, yeah, the law was always there in the books, but Giuliani was probably safe from any kind of enforcement before Trump, and after Trump, he's safe because, well, Trump's in office and that's his buddy. But
isn't it glorious that Rudy Giuliani is like, who was back in the day a prosecutor, the SDNY of New York? Well, excuse me, 321. SDNY is going to be going after their old boss. I mean, that's just like pretty rich. I just have to, as a person who was never a fan of Mayor Giuliani, I must say that is quite exquisite retribution.
Well, we'll see what happens. But earlier when I was saying that the person in the administration most likely to go to get indicted is Sondland, well, for those out of the administration, I'd say Rudy's making the list. Yeah,
Rudy's doing. Rudy can fail. Rudy will fail.
And now here's what I will say, and this is, I say this reluctantly because he certainly does not, in any respect, deserve the benefit of any doubts, and does not deserve any kind of sympathy for what situation he's in now. All that said, and with my reluctance to appear to be defending him, I gotta say, the more I see from Rudy Giuliani lately, I have serious questions about his mental fitness. I just do. Like, it's
well, no, he's it's painful. He seems sane. He seems sane to me. I just
really?
Feel like
have you seen his text messages?
So I mean, okay, he relatively sane, but I don't think he's crazy. I feel like he's a man so drunk with arrogance and power,
and also so drunk.
Yeah, just drunk. He's just like drunk with power, drunk with arrogance, a narcissist.
And whiskey.
And I guess you can sit there and maybe like make a clinical.
I'm not even clinical. I'm just saying, like, every time I see him, like especially the last few weeks, it's hard to tell that kind of privilege from some kind of actual issue. But I don't want to believe that's the case because, like, dude definitely deserves what's coming. But also, yeah, I kind of wonder. He does not seem, and it could just be alcohol abuse. Like, that could be purely explaining it, because he is not in a good frame of mind. Oh, by the way, if anyone out there happens to have Giuliani's cell phone number, pass it this way, because everyone else is having fun with it. I want to too.
Yeah, I mean, I had a friend on Twitter who just literally asked randomly. She goes, hey, does anyone have his text and his phone number? And someone gave it to her, and she texted him, and he responded.
Yeah, so someone gave it to me.
Just give it to us, please.
I'll be nice, for real. I'm just going to, like,
but ask hard questions.
No, I'm literally going to invite him to play Words with Friends.
And just take advantage of
I just want to ask, I really just want to know, like, what online games he plays and if he's any good at Words with Friends. We'll find out if someone gives me his number. So, again, I could be wrong there. I'm just putting it out there because, like, he has been so erratic and so off. But, you know, that could just be because he gets drunk and starts texting everyone and just regrets it the next day. So, Waj, would you say that you're one of the Americans that gets enough fruit and veggies in their diet?
I do not, but in my old age, I have been trying. You'd be proud to know that I eat prunes now.
So people like me who don't eat right and know we need to, that's why there's Your Super. YourSoper. Your Super is the way to solve all your failures at eating what you should.
Yeah, 9 out of 10 Americans actually don't eat enough fruit and vegetables. They don't know what to eat. They can't afford it. They don't have access to it. That's why Your Super is actually pretty amazing. It's formed by two former tennis players. And Michael, who's the husband, got cancer. And his wife and him helped cook up like a, if you will, a batch, a super batch of fruits and vegetables. And it helped him. And they decided, you know what? Let's share this recipe with the world.
Your Super is the easiest and most delicious way to get more fruits and veggies in your diet. You may not be able to control everything in your life, like what's going on in the White House right now, just for example, but you can control what you eat. And by adding Your Super's superfood mixes to my daily routine, I feel like I'm taking my health into my own hands. So get the cleanest superfood and plant protein mixes at yoursuper.com. That's yoursuper.com. Get 15% off your first order when you use code 45th at checkout. Just go to yoursuper.com and don't forget to get 15% off with promo code 45th at checkout.
I know we're going to talk about Syria, but since we just briefly teased it, but because news is always breaking because everything's broke, Donald Trump sent a letter to Erdogan where he warned him, quote, not to be a tough guy, don't be a fool. And it starts with, let's work out a good.
What are you talking about?
There's a copy of a White House letter to Erdogan signed by Donald Trump.
Is that just coming out now?
Journalist. Yeah. Journalist just got a copy and it was dated October 9th. I just want to throw that.
I have no idea what the hell.
You know how it ends with?
I mean,
this is between us real quick. It goes, don't be a tough guy. Don't be a fool. I will call you later. Sincerely, Donald
Jesus
Trump.
Jesus Christ.
All right. Anyway.
Wait, what?
Sorry about
that. Do I got to go read this now?
Yes. It's amazing. Fast forward. History will look upon you favorably if you get this done in the right and humane way. It will look upon you forever as the devil if good things don't happen. Period. Don't be a tough guy. Period. Don't be a fool! !! New paragraph. I'll call you later.
As the devil, if good. My brain is like melting in my skull right now.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. My favorite part is I will call you later. After all, that's my favorite part. After all the threats and bluster, awesome.
What's that feeling for, like, the existential dread you get when you see something Trump does and you're like, this can't be real. And you know it's real, but the Germans know. I'm sure, like, Angela Merkel has invented the word for it.
Uber surrealism? I don't know. This is just like, and you know, your actual response is the response of many people. Like, before sharing it, several people are like, wait, is this actually real? This has actually happened. And the fact that we have to ask that question and the fact that you actually could believe that this is real is...
People are like dying right now. Like, it's just... This dude is just killing people out of his stupidity. And he's, oh my God. How did we find the world's literalist, dumbest motherfucker make him president?
White rage.
Yeah, that's how you do that.
White rage and reality TV, my friend.
Well, that is a letter that is apparent on Twitter right now. And like, yeah, White House has confirmed it's real.
Wow. So you actually, I was so busy just reading the letter for the third time.
I was hoping it wasn't. But yeah, White House has confirmed it is real. Now, we'll talk more about this later, but who released it? Was it Turkey? It was definitely Turkey.
probably because it was, I got it from Fox, Trish Regan from Fox Business.
Don't be a fool. Well, back to Giuliani, who, is not taking the advice of don't being a fool. He also refused to comply with the House's subpoenas. He had an attorney, John Sale, who was representing him to deal with the subpoenas asking for documents. He retained this attorney like on October 1st. And strangely, Tuesday, when Giuliani responded to the subpoena, he said, oh, I'm done. My work here is over. I'm no longer working for Giuliani because I was just retained to respond to Congress, and now it's been done. The response he sent was like, I'm not responding to your, quote, impeachment inquiry. Go see Pat Cipollone's letter for why. Also, it was overly broad, unduly burdensome, and there's privilege issues implied. How do you, as an attorney, write that letter? And you're like, yeah, that's good. I'm done. Peace out. No, that letter is the start, or should be the start, of a whole shitstorm. And there's no logical reason why an attorney would ever have taken on an engagement just to do that and nothing more. So we don't know the whole backstory yet, but as of this moment, Giuliani is pro se, representing himself, and saying that he sees no reason why he'd need an attorney, even though the public reporting so far makes it very clear someone wants to indict his ass.
Could also be operating under the Roger Stone and Roy Cohn theory of engagement, deny, 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 attack, attack, attack. And he also knows that Trump will pardon him. So he's like, maybe if I play a con game and arrogantly bluster my way through, you know, the cable news and the media, maybe I can convince enough people, hey, I got nothing to lose. Because why would this man otherwise be so confident, so brazen, and so reckless? Of course he has nothing to, he didn't commit anything, right? It's like when you want to like kind of gaslight people, you kind of say, you kind of like openly admit the alleged like criminal act and be like, there's nothing criminal about it. And people go, hey, he's openly admitting it. Maybe there's nothing criminal. So maybe that's his like long con game. That's his strategy. Or like you said, maybe he's in severe cognitive decline. Either way.
I think Giuliani has made a series of blunders, but the most serious blunder of all would definitely be his apparent belief that Trump would pardon him and that he is not setting him up to be the next Manafort or the next Cohen.
I think he thinks he's going to be Manafort, but we know he's going to be Cohen.
Oh, he thinks he does not intend on going to prison for anyone. He thinks he's going to be, he can avoid all this. And at this point, you have to think that's because at least in part, he's banking on a Trump pardon, and Trump is not pardoning him.
Yeah. Trump's going to throw him under the bus. He already kind of has. Remember last week? I believe it was last week where he's like, Giuliani, your attorney? And he said, no. I was like, yep, it's over.
You know, he said, I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
That's it. That was the first sign. Like right when I heard Trump say that, I'm like, yeah, it's done. He's over. Giuliani's done. He's toast.
We're on the countdown for the Trump tweet about, if you're looking for an attorney, I strongly recommend you don't hire the services of Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, but Giuliani is also like a man of intense pride and narcissism, and he covets the celebrity. And you better believe he ain't going to go down if Trump ain't going to go down. He will drag Trump down with him.
If he can. But Cohen even took, Cohen recorded his conversations with his clients, and that didn't save him. The thing is, Trump can't be indicted. So there's very little you can do to throw him under the bus as a criminal co-defendant.
But you can taint him. You can go on air and just destroy him. You can text and leak to every single journalist. You can give snapshots of texts and WhatsApp messages that I'm pretty sure he has with Trump.
Cohen tried it. Yeah. Look where he is now.
Yeah, but still, I just feel like Giuliani's a different creature than Cohen. He's a creature of the media. He knows how to work the media. He has those contacts. And Giuliani, like these two old men shiving each other, shanking each other in the back, it would just be a glorious Orange Caesar moment for America. I don't.
It's not going to go down that way. I do not think Giuliani was strategic enough to put together the record he needed to make that happen. He has engaged in some serious FAR misconduct, worse than that. FAR is like the least of his concerns at this point. Given we've heard so far about his involvement with Turkey and with lobbying Trump to extradite Gulen, I think it won't be that hard for the White House to portray Giuliani as the mastermind Rasputin here who should take all the blame and not Trump. Because unless Giuliani recorded every conversation where Trump like greenlit what he was doing, he's going to have a hard time making that stick.
You have no faith in Giuliani, like zero. This is a former prosecutor, like nothing.
I have no faith in Giuliani's ability to stop himself from going up shit creek without a paddle or Trump with them.
No, exactly. That second part.
I had more faith in Cohen. Like, I'm a little bit disappointed with Cohen that he could not manage to, I mean, again, coolie grad, what should I have expected? But I really would have thought that Cohen would be better at that part of the game than Giuliani. I think Giuliani is going to go down hard and may lack the resources to pull, not anyone with him, but certainly lack the resources to pull Trump down with him.
All right, maybe. I still feel he's so, like, to quote John Bolton, he's a live hand grenade. And that's why he's dangerous for Trump.
He's just chaos incarnate, and Trump likes him. They're all loose cannons. Like he's a loose cannon. Like, okay, Dowd and Sekulow kind of are a little more normal-ish, aside from the Comic Sans font. But Cohen was also a loose cannon. Cohen was also, to some degree, more loyal to Trump, more Trump-based. He was more dependent on Trump for everything. He had his own grifts, his own crimes, his own side conspiracies. But most of what he did was to serve Trump and himself while doing it. Giuliani's good at going out and catching his own conspiracies and dragging them back home. Hence the Ukraine stuff, hence the Romania stuff, hence the Kazakh stuff, hence the let's extradite Glenn stuff. And I think that's going to give a lot of rope for the White House to, you know, cast the blame of him with, just to mingle a few analogies there.
But you know what's just interesting? If you just look at people's self-destructive behavior, you're like, dude, Giuliani, you're in the twilight of your life. You have money. Why did you do this to yourself? And like, you know, I just look forward to his answer when he's asked.
I'm telling you, I think that there is something. I don't feel sorry for him either way, but dude should definitely.
No, not
attorney.
At all.
That's all I know is that dude, out of all the dudes, needs a real attorney ASAP.
Did we cover all the bad guys for this week?
We covered a fair bit of them. Man, like sometimes like I enjoy doing this and sometimes I don't. And this is one of the days I don't. Because it just, everything
but that letter,
feels,
but
the letter is definitely like not helping the feeling. It's making it worse. Because some days you can just see so clearly that nothing we can do, nothing anyone can do at this point can stop the unfolding decades-long tragedy ahead of us. We can minimize it. We can still work on making sure that it's not the worst it could possibly be, that we're not on the absolute awfulest timeline of all the awful timelines available. I guess what I'm saying is everything seems pretty fucking futile right now. So on that happy, optimistic note.
I'm optimistic. I'm actually optimistic because all this is coming to light. It's going to get far worse before it gets better. But at least a majority of Americans are finally seeing it. Some people are finding a spine. The rats are jumping the ship. They're going to start cutting each other. Yes, it's going to get bad because the base is going to get more extreme. However, I still have faith. I feel like the fact that, you know, more people are seeing it is what was necessary. And we still have 12 months to the 2020 election where things are going to get far worse, of course. But, you know, if we can just contain his damage, if we can contain his damage and not only get him out, but also get some of these vulnerable Republican senators out who have attached themselves like parasites to Trump. There might be some silver lining here, Susan.
Well, I hope you're right. But meanwhile, I'm going to go eat a pint of Ben & Jerry's.
And no one will judge you. There will be ice cream shaming. There will
so,
be no.
That's all for this week's 45th. Thanks for coming on Watch. And we'll see y'all next week for the latest round of impeachment everything.
Don't get too depressed in the meantime.
Ben & Jerry's will help. Catch you later, Watch.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use your products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.